Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, a weekly podcast that gives you an in-depth look at the South Alabama Jaguars. You can find a new podcast uploaded weekly online at usajaguars.com or take the podcast with you on your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Just search South Alabama Jaguars.
Welcome to this week's edition of Inside Jag Nation, the official podcast of the University of South Alabama Department of Athletics. I'm Associate Athletic Director for Media Relations, Brian Freeman, and joining us this week is men's basketball assistant coach, Russ Willemson. Coach, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Brian. Excited to be here.
I can easily jump right into it because I think we both know most people want to know how you guys have gotten where you've gotten this year. Off to a 5-0 start, first time since 1982-83. What do you feel like, as you've watched this team, has been the key to that start?
I think the key has been team chemistry, and that started last spring. Hired new strength coach, Ross Yergel. He's been really, really good about pushing the guys. We started a kind of toughness workouts on Friday that we called Road Trip Friday. And then our trip to Europe, where guys had to shut their cell phones off and kind of spend time together, get to know each other and interact in unique situations. I think the team chemistry part of this year's team is what makes them very special. They enjoy working hard. They enjoy being around each other. They take coaching. Some days we're harder on them than others, depending on how many days we are out from a game. But they've embraced it, and they do it together, and it's exciting to watch.
You know, knowing how the last few years have gone, your first few years on the staff, is there a sense of reward or pride to see a process sort of come to this point, or is it way too early in the season to have those kind of warm and fuzzy feelings?
I mean, I think we're starting to see some of the rewards from hard work, but it's all attributed to everybody involved in the program. It's not just one person, all the way down from our managers to our head coach to assistant coaches. We're all working for a common goal, and it is rewarding, but on the flip side, we're 5-0, but we're trying to win the next game, and that's what it's about. It's about the process. It's about tomorrow. We had today off from practice. Tomorrow being Wednesday, we got to get after it. If we're not, then it's our job as coaches to hold them accountable to that.
As one of three full-time assistants on Coach Graves' staff, each of you, I think, has different personalities, brings different strengths to the table. What's your approach in how you work with the student athletes day to day, and how you think you can best help keep this momentum the program has going?
Each coach has its own responsibilities. Darnell and Matthew do our offense. Brock and I do our defense. Brock handles mainly the half-court defense. I do rebounding and transition defense. So from a responsibility standpoint, it comes to that. But I think one of my biggest roles is being an energy guy. I tend to bring that every day, and there'll be days that our guys will come up and say, "Hey, coach, need some energy today. Need some energy. We're a little tired. We need it." And I've worked with 11 other assistant coaches, and I talk to all the former coaches I've ever worked with on a regular basis. But there's something unique about this staff. There's no egos. People just come in and go to work, and I've learned a ton from obviously Matthew, but from Darnell and Brock on different ways to handle situations. But it is one of the best staffs from a staff chemistry standpoint as well that I've ever been a part of.
So as we head into the Thanksgiving holiday, and you guys play Saturday 3:15 at Eastern Illinois in your next game, but there's a long way to go till you've faced Troy in the opener that first weekend of January to start Sun Belt play. There's a long, long way to go before the conference tournament in March. But – as you look at this team, where it's come from in the spring to where it's at now, you know, what do you feel like in your ability to observe is the potential for this group?
I think our potential will be as far as our egos allow us to go. I think we've got a definitive top 8 or 9 right now that are playing well. The hardest thing is I think everybody wants to contribute and everybody's working hard. If we can put egos aside and continue to work hard, in our first team meeting of the first day of practice, Coach said our goal every day needs to be to get better. And if we take that approach with a toughness and a sense of humility that we're not as good as we think we are, we need to keep getting better. I think that the sky's the limit.
Yeah, so you talked a little bit about your role and how you see yourself as an energy guy. I want to kind of bring up a few different areas that I think people are well aware that fall within the job of an assistant coach. And really, it's not just basketball. It's, you know, assistants have to do these things that I think it in a lot of team sports. But just if you would, when I ask you about an area, if you could tell us kind of your approach to it and also how Coach Graves delegates that responsibility amongst you guys, I think it'd be interesting to give listeners an ability to something they just don't see and probably don't understand. And first is how you guys go about putting together a game or a practice plan and what kind of time goes into it and how you organize that process.
It all depends on how far we are out from a game. If we're playing, for instance, Eastern Illinois on Saturday, we'll start to incorporate some of the actions that they use within their offense on Wednesday. Now, we won't necessarily tell our guys, hey, this is what Eastern Illinois runs, because we want to focus on us getting better. But if they run a back screen, ball screen a lot in their offense, we may work on that in a 4-on-4 defensive drill. But Coach will ask us our opinion. He usually does 90% of the practice plan, then leaves about 10% for our opinion, stuff that he thinks we need to work on. But we all have input. We'll usually start off with a bunch of skill work, 15 to 30 minutes of skill. Then we'll get into some kind of transition defense, half-court offense, and work on some zone and some special situation stuff that may come up in games. But we do a lot of stuff. We try to make a lot of it competitive, because that tends to get guys to work the hardest when it's competing. And guys, there's something on the line, whether it's running or there's a consequence with push-ups or something like that.
So you talked about a little bit, but scouting opponents. Some coaches will give one assistant that job. Some split up between members of the staff. How is that situation in your guys' offices?
Coach Graves comes up with a schedule for the entire year. This past weekend, for instance, in our 3-day tournament, Darnell had our scout against Florida International. Brock had the next day against Youngstown, and then I had the third day against Jacksonville. Brock has Southern Miss coming up this Tuesday. Darnell has Eastern Illinois on Saturday. So it just varies time of the week. And you'll never, if one person has a conference opponent, if we play Arkansas State twice, then it'll be the same person that has that same scout. But it's unique. It's fun. I take a lot of pride in learning the other team's not only offenses but play calls, so that we can be a step ahead of the team. So when they call a play out, we're already echoing to our players what they're trying to run. And you'll see some teams get frustrated, like Jacksonville on Sunday. We knew exactly when they were going to run their ISO plays, where they tried to go one-on-one against our guys, and our guys were ready and did an excellent job of guarding that and handling those situations.
So when you're preparing a scout, how much time goes into watching film of the other team? And if you guys do any written report, how much goes into laying out and putting pen to paper, so to speak, each time you have an opponent?
It all depends on how much film they have. This early in the season, teams usually have, like take UNLV, for instance. Watching last year's film wouldn't have benefited us from UNLV. They had I think, 9 or 12 new players, new coach. So we were stuck with the film we had. Now, they went on a foreign trip this summer, and we saw some highlights from that that we were able to watch, and we got one of their exhibition games. But Denver's my next scout, and they have played Jacksonville already and San Jose State. Well, they play five other games before us. I will watch all five of those games. It takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours per game, and then when you try to put it all together to give to coach and present to our players, you're probably looking at 10 to 15 hours for each scout, and I think it all depends on how detailed you want to be. Our staff is very detailed, and we want to be the most prepared team in the country, so we spend a lot of time on that. I've worked other places where teams will just go to a website we have called Synergy, and they can just basically take every offensive clip and just load those onto a disc and give those to their boss and not even watch them and just go from there. But we are very detail-oriented. We want to know exactly what the other team's doing. We want to know what kind of defenses they're running, how we can score on them, how we're going to guard certain actions. So we spend a lot of time scheming and strategizing and stuff like that to make sure we have an advantage.
And then actually, when it comes to self-evaluation, how frequently do you guys do that? How much time do you spend watching film on us, whether it's a game or a practice? And how do you go about giving the guys the evaluation, and this is what we're doing well, and this is what we're going to work on, and why?
We've got a goal board in our Players Lounge, and we go over that after every game, and it has certain offensive goals and defensive goals that we want to hit, and there's eight total on there, and we try to get five out of those eight, and so far we've been pretty successful doing that. Is why we're 5-0, the process of what it takes to win. But as far as individual film with each player, we will watch film as a team after each game, but each assistant coach has certain players. I've got our wing, so I've got Shaq, Stover, Trey, Jordan Andrews, Ethan Haslam. Arch has all six of our bigs, and Brock has our combo guards, Herb, John Petway, Juice, Dedrick Lee, and Devin Epps. So we break down film individually for those guys and show them film on an individual basis, but we also watch it every day as a team, whether it's, you know, if it's coming off a game, we may show 25, 30 clips of things that we need to work on mixed with things that we did really well. If it's before practice, it may be 5 or 6 quick clips. We just want to get their mind mentally ready for practice. But we show film a lot.
And then there's the big one, because without it, you have no student athletes to coach. Tell us about recruiting, how you guys handle it in terms of if there are different responsibilities, how much time goes into it, you know, what you're looking for, how you even initiate contact with a prospect. Just curious about that whole process and how Coach Graves has you guys organized to handle that.
Like I said before, this staff, we do not have egos. So we try to recruit as a group. One assistant may identify, take Herb McGee, for instance. Once Brock identified him as a player that we had potential to get, he was the lead guy on him, and he did 95% of the work. But, you know, once or twice a week, he's reaching out to one of us assistants to call the kid to so he gets to know everybody on our staff. Kevin Morris, Darnell Archie was the lead guy on him. Same thing. Darnell took the lead, but then we all help out. So when he comes on campus on an official visit, he's got a relationship with everybody. And it's harder for a kid to say no when he knows everybody on staff. So each assistant coach has their geographic area that they are responsible for. But once we identify kids, like my list of 2018 recruits may have that's kids that are juniors right now, may have 35 to 40 kids on there. And by the time we get to April, it'll be down to about 7 or 8 that we're serious about. And that'll be for each assistant coach. And then once we get to June, we'll hone that down to about 3 or 4 per assistant coach that we really want. But there's also backup guys in case something happens with those primary guys.
Is it you find out about guys by just when you are, is it the summer circuit and all those AAU games? How important are high school results to you guys? And, you know, is it you guys going gym to gym, or do coaches send you film and say, you need to look at this guy? And you know, how does it work in terms of deciding who makes those lists?
We subscribe to some scouting services that will send us names of kids, and they'll have an eval for each kid and rank some kids. We don't put a lot of stock into those rankings. However, what it's good for is getting a list of guys to see in the summer. And once we see them at a young age in the summer, if we like them, we'll continue to evaluate them and track their progress. But one thing about Coach is he's not – you're not going to pull a fast one on him. As far as if you play well in AAU, he'll like you, but you got to play well with your high school team. He's got to see you in multiple venues of playing. So it's not just we see a kid in AAU and we're like, man, we got to take that kid. We may like him in AAU and then go watch him with his high school team, and he's not working very hard, he's a dog. We may go watch him, he's a bad teammate or something like that. So we use AAU, we use high school practice, we use high school games. We kind of pull all that together and have data. And the other good thing that Coach does is everybody on our staff will go evaluate a kid. So I won't go to Coach and say, hey, Coach, we need to sign this kid. He'll be like, I'll go to him and say, Coach, I really like him. So then he'll go watch him. He'll be like, yeah, I really like him too. Let's send Brock or Darnell to see him too. And so now all of us are equally involved in it, where it's harder to miss on a kid when everybody has to say yay or nay on him.
I know that's a lot of the major points. If there's anything that I've missed, please feel free to enlighten myself and our listeners. But, you know, in season, day to day, what would you say your day is like in terms of when you come in the office, when you get home, and how much time you're putting into this?
Our staff usually gets in pretty early, usually before 8 a.m. we're in, and obviously if we're practicing earlier than that, we'll be in before that. But one of my main responsibilities this year we started is our shooting groups. So I'm on the court with our guys a lot. So most of my film work is done at night, but typically we're in and there'll be film. We'll meet on practice in the afternoon. And then usually we are gone, I want to say usually by 5:30, and then we'll go home, obviously eat dinner with our families. And then it's either recruiting calls or film till about 9:30 or 10. And then, you know, kind of shut it down a little bit and back at it again the next morning.
So there's a lot that you've got to take care of, and I'm sure you feel like, okay, there are some things I'm comfortable with, some that I want to get better at, and you know, how do you handle kind of long-term focus and strengthening the areas you might feel are your weaknesses versus taking care of the student athletes, the other coaches, and the program?
For me personally, one of the areas that I've struggled with is I'm a task-oriented leader. I've got a certain list laid out every day that I want to get done. And over the last three, four years coming down here, because I spent so much time at Tennessee Tech that I knew everybody coming through the program, I'd recruited a lot of those guys, that coming down here and not knowing these players, I tried to get into the coaching side of it with the team before actually having a relationship with them. So it has helped me take a step back and realize that there's times that I need to shut my computer down and just sit and talk with our players just to see how they're doing. And it's not how I'm wired. So it's something that I've had to work hard to do. Because again, like I said, I'm very task oriented. So if I'm in the middle of watching film and one of our players comes in, I'm so focused on that film, it's hard. So I've got to shut my computer down and kind of, how you guys doing? Tell me about life. How's your classes? Your family all right? Cafeteria going well? You know, how's your girlfriend? Stuff like that. Because if they bring that stuff into practice and you haven't touched on it yet, they're going to be moody, or they may not have a good practice, and it's just because they need someone to talk to them. They just need someone to be there for them.
Yeah, with all the experience you've been through so far, and then I'll go over the career path here in a little bit, but if there's one thing that you would have an opportunity to tell anyone who considers themselves an aspiring coach what it is they need to do to prepare to be an assistant at the Division I level, what advice would you give them?
When I was at Lee University, which was NAI at the time, I worked camps in the summer, and I would set up a schedule for the month of June and July where I would go and work Wake Forest and Louisville and UT Chattanooga and Auburn and Tennessee and Tennessee Tech and Five Star up in Pittsburgh. I worked Syracuse camp. I tried to work as many camps as I could, and I met people. And I worked Tennessee's camp one year, and I remember it was like it was yesterday. I was sitting outside on the phone with my dad, and I got a phone call from Dustin Kearns, who's now an associate head coach at Wofford. He was a graduate assistant at Tennessee at the time. He said, hey, and I had worked their camp the previous summer. He said, hey, I can get you an interview at Tennessee Tech for a GA spot. What you do from there is on you. So that was middle of May. I ended up getting an interview 2 weeks later. I've got the job, and it was because I worked camps in the summer. That would probably be the best piece of advice, is to work as many camps and meet as many people as you can, because you never know who can help you and who is willing to recommend you for a job. The next piece of advice I could probably give is my wife and I, we pay our tithe every month, and every year that I've been in this business, the good Lord has blessed us with a raise or blessed us with advancement. And that is something that I 100% attribute to part of our success.
So I want to go back now to the very beginnings of the Coach Williamson career. Tell us about, where you grew up, your family, any other siblings, and kind of the things that you were interested in as a kid running around.
I grew up in New York, and I'm actually going there this weekend. I will not be at our game in Eastern Illinois. My grandmother on my mom's side passed away last night, so the funeral is Saturday, so I'm flying up there, so I'll get to see my brother, who I haven't seen in about 2 years. But my sister lives in Cleveland, Tennessee. She's principal at Cleveland High School in Cleveland, Tennessee, outside of Chattanooga. And then my brother, I'm the youngest of three, they live in New York, and my parents live in New York too, so I'll be up there for a couple days. But dad's a minister, mom works at a community college, or not a community college, but a Division III up there, Cuca College. And they are very benevolent people. They give. My dad, obviously working for the church, he started many ministries out of the back seat of one of our trucks, where he would feed elderly people. And I remember growing up, he would force me to go Saturday mornings. I'd have to get up at 7 a.m. And my mom, when I was a junior, senior, she'd be like, okay, you can stay out till midnight, but understand, if you dance, you're going to pay the fiddler. And I said, what do you mean by that? She said, well, you're getting up and helping your dad in the morning. So I hated it at the time, but it actually was a valuable lesson, because I realized that no matter what choices I made, I still had to live with the consequences. And I'm thankful for my parents every day. They've been great. But I started off, obviously as a manager at Lee University, and I didn't really want to get into coaching. I wanted to be a lawyer. And then when I started to see the coaching side of it, I was like, man, I want to be a high school coach. And then when I was 19, my boss at the time, because Lee was NAI, we only had one assistant. We had one assistant, a graduate assistant, and then some student assistants. He put me on the road recruiting at the age of 19. So I was out recruiting a little bit, and I got a taste of it. I was like, man, this is nice, traveling around, meeting people. And I enjoyed it and been blessed and fortunate to be where we are today.
So I'm going to dangerously make an assumption that at some point, youth, high school, you played basketball to a certain level, but are there any other sports that you were interested in, or was it always kind of the focus on the one, and that's kind of how you ended up as a basketball coach rather than another sport?
Well, my dad was a pretty good baseball player, so he wanted me to play that. So I played it. I was okay. Football was actually probably my best sport. Not, I don't have blazing speed or anything like that, but I just have instincts. And I had a football coach call me. I went to a small high school and led some counties interceptions. And I had one coach call me my senior year. He said, "Well, how big are you? I see you're leading a bunch of schools interceptions. How big are you?" And I said, "About 6 feet tall." He goes, How much you weigh? I said, 130. He said, "Well, good luck the rest of the year." That was about the extent of that. So I put on 35 pounds my first year of college. I went from 130 to 165. So I guess you would say I was a late bloomer, but my passion's always been with basketball. That's where it's been. I obviously enjoyed playing other sports and enjoy watching. I love going to South Alabama football games, go Jags. But I enjoy watching other sports, but basketball's where my heart is.
So since you weren't recruited to play and you weren't a student athlete, tell us about the decision to go to Lee. You're going from upstate New York to Tennessee. What attracted you to that, and were there any other schools that you considered at the time?
Yeah, I had a couple local community colleges I could have went and played basketball at. I just wanted to get away. And my sister was down there, and she's 7 years older than I am, and I always looked up to her as a role model. So the fact that she went to Lee University as well, she played softball there, she was already down there, it made the transition easier. But my dad actually went there as well, so I was familiar with it. I'd been on campus, you know, 6-7 times. It felt like home, and it was one of those things that it just felt right.
So you earned your degree 2004. You stayed on staff in a part-time role at Lee. And then an opportunity came at Tennessee Tech. You started as director of ops and then moved into an assistant role. You know, talk about making the move from NAIA to Division I and what went into it. And you look back now, do you think you were prepared, or do you know how overwhelming might it have been at that time?
I don't know if you're ever prepared. I think that you just kind of get thrown into the fire and do the best job you can and work as hard as you can and live with the results. And, you know, when I got to Tennessee Tech, I was very fortunate. My first boss at the time was Mike Sutton, and that April, so I got hired in June. In April, he got hit with a rare condition called Guillain-Barré syndrome, and it basically paralyzes you. And some people make full recoveries, some don't. And he interviewed me on the phone from his hospital bed. I had never met him before. I knew the associate head coach, Steve Payne, and he recommended me for the job once Dustin Kearns had called him. So I knew them, but Mike Sutton interviewed me from his hospital bed. And when I got there, each Division I program, you're allowed the head coach and three assistants that can get on the road recruiting. Well, this was in the middle of July when you have July recruiting. Well, he was in the hospital. So I got a waiver to get on the road recruiting. And so I got a little experience with that, and then actually signed a player that year, my first year there, that coach really liked. And he came back in November, so I was able to coach from June until November. So when he came back, I went back to just the director of operations responsibilities, and we had an assistant coach leave, and he called me in and said, "Hey, you've done a heck of a job. We're gonna bump you up." And I was like, "Are you serious?" Because I know how hard it is. It was one of those things, like, was I qualified? Probably not, but I got lucky, and I felt like I worked as hard as I could, and the good Lord took care of us, and I was blessed to be put in that situation. And at the time, I was 23 and a half. I hadn't even turned 24 yet, and I'm looking at these other coaches that are, you know, 35, 36, 37. My first AAU event, I walked in, like, looking around, like, I'm the youngest guy in here. They all think I'm a player.
Well, you ended up 7 years as a full-time assistant, 8 in all, and then you ended up coming down and joining Coach Graves' staff. So talk about making the move at that time. why you might have been interested in leaving a position that obviously you were probably not only comfortable at, but you had success as a program with 20 win seasons and all OVC players and that nature. How'd you find out about the opening? Why were you interested?
I remember talking with Matthew in Orlando at an AU event, and at that time I did not know that he had a position available. I had known him for 3 or 4 years, and we had talked when we were on the road, and I get back that night. It was Sunday, I think, when I saw him, and I got back that night from recruiting. It was the last day we could be out, and I saw something pop up on Twitter. So I texted him and said, hey, I would love to talk to you about the job. And you know, usually when you see something already public, the job's usually filled. And he said, I'll call you in about 5 minutes. And we ended up talking for about an hour and a half. And my wife and I felt like it was the right time. Very grateful for my opportunity at Tennessee Tech. The head coach, I worked for two different head coaches there. The guy that's there now is Steve Payne. He's like a brother to me. And him and I still talk about twice a week. And I just felt like it was time to learn something new, and the opportunity to get under the Butler tree and learn the system that obviously has been successful and led a team to back-to-back national championship games. You can't pass that up. And when we came down here, we interviewed, my wife and I came down, and we just fell in love with campus and the people down here, and we met Dr. Erdman and the other assistants on staff, and we just felt like it was a great fit.
What do you enjoy most about coaching?
Being around the guys. I think when you see players grow up from their freshman to senior year, after my first year here, we had a group of 3 or 4 seniors that graduated the same year when I was at Tennessee Tech, and it was the end of my first year here that they had just graduated the year before. Two of them got married the same day, and one was in Tennessee and one was in Bowling Green, Kentucky area. So I drove to one wedding, hit the reception up for the other player getting married, and it's just when you see these kids grow up and they argue about being 2 minutes late their freshman year because they don't see the well, coach, what's it matter that I'm 2 minutes late? Well, then all of a sudden their senior year, they're like, coach, thank you for staying honest. You were right. You were right. You had our best interests in mind. We didn't like it at the time. When you see them develop and grow into men, I think that is the most fulfilling part of our job.
If you had an opportunity and you could take a duty and assign it to someone else, what part of the job would that be?
Probably summer camp, because that's probably one of the few times that we are slow because we can't be out recruiting in June. I enjoy it because my niece and nephew come down from Tennessee, so they're at camp. I enjoy that part of it. Don't get me wrong, I do enjoy the camp part of it, but basketball wise, everything we do amongst our staff, there's nothing that I'm just like, man, why do I have to do that? But I enjoy it.
I believe that's what we call professionally a good answer. kind of long-term goals you have? I mean, not that you don't have to necessarily tell, you know, if you want to be a head coach, you don't have to tell us an age, and then if you miss it, it's forever recorded. But, like, you know, what do you hope to do? And is there a certain level, be it 1, 2, or 3, that you're looking at, or maybe different conferences? I mean, so much do you feel comfortable talking about down the road?
I 100% have aspirations of running my own program one day at the Division I level. My goal is to be the best I can be today. Tomorrow will be the best I can be then, and let everything else work itself out. My dad always said growing up, the cream always rises to the top. So I firmly believe that if you work hard, do the best job you can, treat people the right way, good things will happen.
And before we get into the quick response questions, I know that in recent years you've written for a couple of websites. Just talk about that. Certainly not something that would fall under the duties of an assistant coach normally. So how'd you come about that? Why were you interested? And I'll even give you the chance to give a shout out to some people and maybe throw some websites out there where they can see your work.
I used to write for a website called College Chalk Talk, and basically what it was is a good buddy of mine that works for the Atlantic 10, Chris DeSanto, he would get assistant coaches to basically write articles about their team, about something that happened. So when we got back from Spain, hey, will you write a quick article about your experience over there? And him and I became friends, and he actually asked me when John Wooden passed away, they were doing a series of articles about his pyramid of success, and he asked me to write the lead-up article to that, which I was very humbled to be asked to do that. But then I also write for basketballhq.com. The College Chalk Talk, that website no longer exists. He got out of that because he's working for the A10 now. But basketballhq.com is a drills website, but it also has a bunch of articles on there. And that's I know the guys that run that website, so they've asked me to write several times and asked me if I would mind asking a couple of our assistants. So Jordan's actually written an article for him. Darnell Archie, Brock has, so it's been good. It's a good way to help promote our program, and I think this business is a lot about being a lifelong learner, and any time that you can share something that you may have stolen or picked up from someone else, I think that's a positive thing.
We're visiting with Russ Williamson, assistant men's basketball coach this week on Inside Jag Nation. Appreciate the time, but before we let you go, we're going to put 24 seconds on the shot clock, and we're going to ask you some questions and see if you can't answer them all before time expires. Think you can get the job done?
Well, the college shot clock's 30 seconds, so I've got about 6-plus to work with.
I'm trying to advance you professionally. That's what you're going to have to remember. I believe, much like everything else in life, the professional leagues have a little more money to throw around, so that's your best interest at heart. When you have the rare moment away from the job and basketball, what do you like to do with your free time?
My wife and I enjoy to go to movies. We enjoy going out to eat and we have 3 rescue dogs that we enjoy taking for walks on a daily basis.
What's your favorite sport outside of basketball?
College football.
Best athletic event you've ever attended as a fan?
The Red Diamond Roundball Classic.
No, you attended that professionally.
We attend the Final Four every year, so that's pretty neat.
What's on the Russ Williamson bucket list sporting event you want to go to you've never been to yet?
That's a good one. NBA championship, NBA finals.
When you and presumably the missus go on a dream vacation, where's that going to be?
Like to go to, maybe someplace in Africa, go on a safari. I'd like to take her back to Spain. I mean, I thought Madrid and Barcelona and some of those places in Europe, they were beautiful. We really enjoyed our time over there.
Favorite movie?
I like comedies. Obviously, Wedding Crashers, movies like that can get you laughing a little bit. I really enjoy those.
Favorite book?
Read a book when I was in college called The Servant by James C. Hunter. It's very, very – it's probably the best book I've ever read.
Favorite musical artist?
Old school Kanye West.
And down the road, when you have many riches and successes and they make the Russ Williamson story, what actor plays the lead role?
A lot of people, and I'll attribute this to a story. One time we were playing Austin Peay, and I had long hair at the time, and I was calling out every play they were running, and it got dead quiet in there, and one of the fans stood up and said, yelled, "Hey, Screech, sit down and shut up." So I would probably say Dustin Diamond.
I think you went over the time limit of both the professional and college shot clock, but for that answer, you get a pass. Coach Russ Williamson, appreciate the time today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Go Jags.
Inside Jag Nation is a production of South Alabama Athletics. Any rebroadcast or distribution of this podcast without the express written consent of South Alabama Athletics is strictly prohibited. Remember, you can find a new episode of Inside Jag Nation every week on USAJaguars.com or have them automatically uploaded to your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Keep up to date with the Jags by following us on Twitter with @USAJaguarSports and @JagNationUSA. Thanks for listening, and go Jags! Wow.